Hey Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you can. We can finally get this on the books. Appreciate you dealing with the rebooks.
You're welcome, Jeff. It's good to meet you, and it's good to talk to you, and it's really exciting to come on the show and share with you some things, and hopefully your audience will get something from it.
Amazing. So I'm going to introduce you to the audience who may not be familiar with you. So I'm joined today by Tim Hughes. He's the CEO and co-founder of DLA Ignite. DLA stands for Digital Leadership Associates. And so I appreciate you having an acronym that's easy to remember. He's also known as the author of Social Selling, Influencing Buyers and Changemakers. A second edition is now available. And I'm going to plug for you anyway, so on Amazon. And I believe you're also the author of a second book, the yellow cover. What's the first edition then?
The first edition is a white cover. But that's 7 years old. This is the new one, the one with the yellow cover.
Well, yellow really pops. I imagine it. Have you done like a A/B test?
I don't know, but when the publisher sent it to me, I just went, yeah, that's it.
Cool, very cool. And then you have a second book. Can you tell me about the second book?
So we brought a second book out in 2018. It's called Smarketing, which at the time was the term that people used for merging sales and marketing. And it is about that. It's actually a case study. I can't tell you the name of the company, but I give you a clue that one of the authors, Hugo Witcher, works for Oracle. But I can't tell you who the case study is. But it's about merging sales and marketing and getting them to work together, which in a kind of a way, if I wrote it today, I'd probably call it RevOps or something like that.
Well, you know, it's funny. Back in 2017, 2018, I was at a company where I was brought in as a leader of operations, go-to-market operations. And we used the word smarketing for a good 2 quarters. And we eventually renamed it revenue operations, or go-to-market operations, sorry. And we realized a lot of the practices and philosophy behind it. So I think you were probably the igniting spark behind it.
Oh, I don't know about that, but there was a lot of talk on social media about, and they were using this term called smarketing, and I was just really fed up because everyone kept saying there isn't a solution for this, and I was going, well, there is. And then we wrote a book about it.
So the age of social media, right, started gaining, and I think at first people started thinking about it as a consumer-based kind of channel, and I think you were one of the first to jump on the trend that, no, it could be used for B2B.
Yeah, I think most people think, when they think of social media, they think of Instagram or now TikTok and you know, direct to consumer. But actually, all of us are on social media in some shape or form. 61% of the world's population is now active on social media. And active means the average person now spends 2 hours, 27 minutes a day on social media.
There was a
report from Pew Research that came out recently that said teens are on it all the time. You know, what we're seeing is that COVID and all of these things, this kind of aligning of the planets, where what we're doing is that the first place we go is social media. It's not a destination as it probably was about 4 or 5 years ago. It's now where we are and where we're active. And, you know, if you're in B2B, that's where your customers are. It's where your employees are. It's where your future employees are. It's where your investors are, or your future. Everybody's there. So everybody that you want to influence, whether it's a buyer or whether it's a future employee, all of the people are there. And you've got the ability to go out and connect and build relationships with them and not spam them.
Well, my first interaction with social media, I believe, was the blogging platforms. So Blogger, Zanga, starting with an X. Then after that was MySpace. I don't think people remember what MySpace was, but that was like literally my first foray into connecting with folks digitally. And so the idea of meeting people online was hugely exciting at that time. I'm very curious, when we think about switching from D2C to B2B, and what that portends for different departments collaborating with one another. You called this marketing, it's now called revenue operations. You know, where does collaboration and alignment play within a business?
I think that, I mean, we got to a point, certainly when I was in corporate, where clearly we couldn't go on throwing stones at each other over email. And there has to be a bringing together, and there has to be some level of integrated strategy. Because, you know, we would announce, you know, 1st of June, this is the new year, and we say, this is where we're going to go. And all the other partners say, well, we're going to go over there. Well, this is what we need to do is that there needs to be this collaboration. And I think sometimes, certainly when we wrote this marketing book, it was seen as a sales taking over marketing. Whereas, you know, it is about collaboration. That's the key thing, and bringing people together and having shared strategy, shared measures, shared objectives, not in we're taking over marketing, but to basically bring people together and to have shared values, shared, just sitting in meetings and saying, so what's a lead? And you go, well, it's this. Well, I don't think it's that. Because, you know, we sit in meetings and say, we're going to generate 10 leads. And what does that actually mean? So I think that's what we tried to do with Smarketing, and I think that's kind of what I see is the vision that we have for RevOps.
I think a real practical application of it was, you know, I try to focus on where can we break down silos, and the easiest thing to do is take a look at a revenue operating model, and the operating model is very similar to the three statement financial model, where they each feed into one another, the income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement, the revenue operating, very similar, top of the funnel to the sales funnel, to post-sale, to the referral engine and customer loyalty. And it's not just a linear line going from one end to the other, it's actually a circle. And that way, everyone's marching towards the same direction, marketing, sales. Now they may share some goals, and you may assign a single-threaded owner. But at the end of the day, the marketing leader is very aware of what the sales goals are, and the sales leader is very aware of what the marketing leader's goals are. And that's where you can find opportunity, common ground, to align resources and strategy.
Yeah, what we looked at was this model of, if I can call it a funnel, it doesn't really matter. You know, I know some parts, it's not a funnel. I know, but there's some sort of process that takes place. From, you know, we have the buyer's journey and we have the selling journey, and people are good at certain stages of it, and what happens is quite often is that we don't get the handover. So there may be saying, right, we're going to get marketing to look at this piece, maybe something like biz dev development will look at this place, and then salespeople are there to close. But it's about aligning the right people with the right talent at the right place. It doesn't really necessarily matter what their job titles are, but getting that alignment, I think, in terms of the funnel, and making sure that then everybody knows what their objective is, everybody knows what that person is doing, and then where the handover sits to the next people. For example, pre-sales, where does that fit? Does that fit? You know, you may have a pre-sales person speaking at a marketing, you know, they're doing a conference and then they're going to speak there. So where do the various people fit in the funnel? And that's the thing that we were trying to work out when we were putting the book together. And that was the thing that we were sort of saying that there needs to be thought going into this. And I think there has been since, you know, we wrote the book in 2018. And I think there's been a lot more thought and development around RevOps since then.
So I think when it comes to designing sales processes, and pre-sales is typically for a more highly technical sale where you need to bring in a specialist, engage with the technical stakeholders on with the prospects. I find that it's not necessarily a sequential sales process. It's actually a parallel sales process, right? So you have the business-minded account executive focused on the business impact, the ROI, digging into the pain. And then you have the technical person, which is looking for a technical win. So you have a business win and a technical win. And those two run in concert with one another. And in fact, if the prospects get into that technical win stage, they're actually rolling up their sleeves and putting a little bit of skin in the game, because they're not just taking in the initial champion or the person you're talking to. They're bringing in the folks who say, well, don't bother me with something unless it's a serious solution that we can implement in place. And I find that it's an awesome place to be as a business, because now you're talking about taking these different sales groups and making sure that they all play a different part within the sales motion, but they're also part of a greater team.
Yeah. And we always saw, and probably because I work for a big company, that the salesperson was quite often the conductor or orchestrating all the different moving parts. Because, you know, we had a team for building a business case. We had a team for pre-sales people. As a small organization, that may actually be, you may have multiple roles. The other thing that we tried to layer on and tried to understand, and I still don't think that we ever, and I still don't think now that we've really got a handle on it, is in terms of we've got the sales process, but what about the buying process? So Sixth Sense have just come out with a report that says that the buyers now contact a sales organization. So we're not talking about outbound, we're talking about an inbound motion. 70% of the way through the buying process. And at that point, they've actually probably decided who they're going to buy from. And so quite often what we were trying to do and was saying, well, we've got this selling process, there's this buying process, but actually the buyers could actually be ahead of us. So are we actually, so how do we know where they are? Or have they just turned up and said, we're just thinking of buying one, can you come in and talk to us? So they could actually be zero of the way through the process. They could be 70% of the way through the process. And that's something that I still don't think that we've ever got to the bottom of. Sorry, I'm digressing.
No, I don't think that precludes, it doesn't stop someone from asking, okay, so how long have you been living with the pain? What solutions have you already explored? You've probably already thought about building something yourself. And then you came to the conclusion, well, building's probably, from a total cost of ownership perspective and total cost of, yeah, it's probably just too expensive for us. Let's go look at a solution that we can go purchase. Tell me where you're at with that. Not necessarily names, if you want to, please divulge it. But, you know, have you already come up with your own decision criteria? Have you, you know, marked down two or three vendors and you're one of them? I'm just very curious without necessarily pitching the old cold pitch, especially if they're inbound.
And I think that's something that's critical for, because we know, we all do it. You know, the first thing we do whenever we want to buy stuff is pick up a mobile and start searching.
Absolutely. Nowadays, they call it dark social, the dark funnel, right? And it's not, and in your attribution systems, you might say it's organic or you just unattributed. You might have an open form that says, how did you hear about us? But when you dig into it, they've already been back channeling. There's some water cooler talk. Nowadays, at the age of Slack communities, people are talking to one another. LinkedIn, like I know I'm back channeling with my peers and saying, hey, have you heard of this tool? What did you think? Honest answer, like, please tell me. And that really informs, it biases me quite a bit, even before I get into a fair, like quote unquote, neutral vendor search process.
I agree. And I think that, I'm aware of organizations that use dark social for their advantage because they know that, placing certain things in there will go into organizations.
Quite frankly, I'm worried about messing up. If I pick a vendor and it's a 6-month implementation and I mess it up, guess whose head's on the chopping block? It's going to be me. So I'm curious, you know, we talked about the handoff process from, you know, marketing to sales development rep to AE in concert with the pre-sales. That's a lot of folks involved with the deal. I know from like a customer service perspective, when I'm calling to the bank and they're passing me out to the fourth person, I often feel like, okay, guys, like, could you have solved it with just one person? That conveyor belt motion, there's a lot of room for getting it wrong. I'm curious where it could go wrong and how would we potentially fix this as this team?
I think that we just need to be cognizant of the fact that there can be breakages. I mean, my business partner, Adam Gray, I mean, he's insistent that the SDR role isn't relevant because of the fact that, you know, so what happens is, because there's nothing that annoys him more than, you know, someone books a meeting with him. He starts building up a relationship with the person and he says, well, a meeting's not actually going to be me, it's going to be with this person. What? And I'm going to meet them for the first time and I have no relationship with them. So there's no rapport or whatever. So, but, you know, I'm not here to debate about SDRs. I mean, I think they've got a really important role to bring. But I think that's one of the things that we can computerize it because we can put it through a CRM and move and have different stages and that. But it's the thing that falls down. And the Sixth Sense report that came out is that people are generally buying from the first people that they talk to.
Really? Oh, that's fascinating. That's a point in the negative column.
It's like 70%, 70% or something like 73% or something. You know, when the people they first talk to, they're the people that are the winning the business.
That's super fascinating. I ran some simple math. So if an SDR has a OTE of like 100K, you know, that's 100K that the AEs are going to have to bring in themselves to support the additional headcount. And I think the ratio today is around 2.5 to 3 account executives. So they're sharing that load. So maybe it's 33 to 40K each. So they're going to have to bring in another 33K of bookings for the year to justify the cost of the SDR assist.
Yep.
So when we think about the sales motion, I always think about, you know, how do we measure this? How do we know that we're being effective working between SDRs, the sales, the pre-sales? I'm curious in your experience how you've thought about, you know, what should we be measuring to measure success?
So we've done a lot of work around measurements. And I work in the digital space. What we're seeing is certainly when we're working with organizations is that there's a far more leading indicators that you can get involved, which, you know, if you do these things, that you'll get success, and they're before you get to the CRM. For example, how big your network is. There's a direct correlation between how big your network is and how successful you're going to be. And then, therefore, how much you grow that every week or every month. And certainly we're seeing these digital indicators as being far more the sort of thing that you would take to a CFO and say, this is... You know, this is how the organization is working, because we're now seeing, depending on what your sales cycle is, you know, 157 days, 9 months, 6 weeks, depending what that is, we're now able to see things ahead of what's actually in the CRM. Let's park the fact that the CRM could be full of hopes and dreams. But what we're trying to do as leaders is trying to get the binoculars on to find out where we're going, so we know whether we can actually invest or not. But the leading indicators before we get to the CRM, we're finding it really, really important.
So I'm curious about social selling, second edition and the first edition. What were some of the main differences between, you know, the first edition and the second edition? What are some of the newer trends that you caught on and said, let's incorporate this into the second edition?
So the first edition, I was still working in corporate, and it was pretty much what was in my head. I'd been doing some fairly rudimentary social selling training, and it was really just to do with that. Whereas with the second edition, we'd been running the business then for 6 years, so we were able to take what clients have been doing and the success that they'd have been having, and basically being able to apply that to the book. So the first thing is we came up with a definition of what social selling is, which, if you don't mind, I'll read that out. We believe that social selling is using your presence and behavior on social media to build influence, make connections, grow relationships and trust, which leads to conversation and commercial interaction. In the second edition has 306 pages. The first edition has 187. So there's a big increase in terms of what we've put in. And that's also awesome. Went out to practitioners. So Mark Schaefer, contributions from clients like CyberHawk, Telstra, RingCentral, Namos. Daniel Guzman wrote a piece. Anita Vasali, when she was at Ericsson. A headhunter friend of mine who's big on social wrote me 2,000 words on what you need to do if you want to be headhunted. So we were basically trying to create it as a go-to destination for everything that you needed to do about social. And I'm really proud about what was published.
Yeah, the social media has blown up for quite a bit, right? If you look at LinkedIn, I think during COVID in particular, folks switch a lot of their LinkedIn, their habits from, say, Facebook or Instagram, and they started switching it to LinkedIn. And LinkedIn has been capitalizing on the feed feature made first popular by Facebook. And At first, I was skeptical. I didn't think it was going to take off. A professional feed, who would want to scroll through that? Sure enough, you find out it's probably their number one feature.
Yeah, I think that the thing that people still think about social media is that it's what's happened is that they're taking what is in effect interrupt marketing. So we take, you know, what we did was we grew up on cold calling or email or whatever. And what we do is that we think that we take that and we move that to social media. But of course, that's not actually how social media works. We did some research and we found that the people come to social media to be social. And if you read the Sixth Sense report that came out, buyers already have access to your product information because they go to your website. They know how to, you know, buyers are not stupid. They know how to go to Google and search, and they know how to go to social media and search. And so if you're sharing product information or doing what everybody says, which is you go to market and say, buy my product because we're great, you just become noise. And you just become the same as everybody else. And so what you'll find is that 80% of the people on LinkedIn, most people just scroll past.
I mean, I can tell you on LinkedIn, I'm immediately messaging a peer of mine who is a customer or someone who's been evaluating. I'm like, hey, you're evaluating Pepsi and Coke. Tell me about the taste test. You brought one home now. Tell me about it. I really want to know I want to know the juicy gossip. Is it working or is it not for you?
So this is one of the things that's really changed over the last 5 years, I think, is that we've got really, really used to search. So there's a guy on LinkedIn called Simon Kemp who puts together a quarterly report on social media. It's paid for by We Are Social and that. But if anybody's listening, Simon Kemp is the person that produced it. It's free. It's not gated or anything. So this is where I know that 61% of the world's population is on social media. And the average person spends 2 hours, 27 minutes because it's all from that report. What he's also found is that most people now under the age of 34 use social rather than they go to social first to search rather than Google. Whereas people over the age of 34 generally go to Google and then they go to social. But what we're seeing is this movement away from search engines to using social. Because if I go to Google and say, what's the best CRM system in the world? Every CRM vendor basically buys that search. It doesn't serve me the response. Whereas if I go to social media and say, hey, Jeff, you've used Salesforce. Go on, tell me what it's really like. You'll say, well, you know, they're the biggest vendor in the world. Sometimes the screens are a bit, you know, but it's a really good, you know, but you will give me your opinion. Just as much as I go, you know, if someone wants to buy my book, they'll go to Amazon and they'll look at the reviews. And there's a whole bunch of strangers there that will give you a view of my book. But you'll make a decision whether you buy it based on those reviews. And what we're seeing now also is that we've got this thing called discovery, which is where people are coming to social media. They actually don't know the question to ask, but they're going on and searching and they're discovering. It's a bit like you walk into in the States, you have malls, we have high streets, but you don't go to the mall to buy something. You go to walk and you look in the windows. And you go there and you're walking down the street and you go, that's interesting. I'd never thought about that. And this is the thing that a lot of people are missing. They don't realize that their LinkedIn profile is basically their shop window to the world. And, you know, I have people come to me saying, I'm a big social seller. And I say, well, and I'm saying you're not, because I just look at your LinkedIn profile and you look the same as everybody else. You look like a salesperson. And as a buyer, whenever I see a salesperson, I'll go, I don't believe a word you say. I don't believe, I don't trust you, and I don't want to talk to you. And what people have to do is that they have to position themselves differently. And this is the change. And what we're seeing now is this discovery. So we've got clients where they've got people that are basically coming to them saying, I've seen your profile. I've seen your content. It's really interesting you're doing that. We've got this problem. Can you help us? And we've got clients where that's turning into multi-million dollar deals.
I love that.
Now, the thing is that you don't do it just by saying, I'm just going to put out the corporate content. Nobody's interested in it. What I want is I want to see, you know, if I'm going to buy $2 million worth of stuff, I want to know that I can trust Jeff. You know, that's, you know, Jeff is important that Jeff's going to be around. It's not just about the solution, because, you know, if we buy the solution, we want, obviously don't want to get fired. But it's also about the person. And, you know, Jeff's putting pictures of his wife and kids, and Jeff's putting pictures of the fact that he's a skydiver. He seems like a normal person. Oh, he's fly fishing this week. Oh, I quite like fly fishing. You know, what I'm doing is I'm actually building the rapport on social media ahead of any sort of meeting like that. Now, the only way that you're going to be seen is because you're in your buyer's network, because that's the way that search works on social media. You are part of the network rather than just searching. So I have to be connected to Jeff. So as a seller, we need to make sure that we look good online. We have a buyer-centric profile. We're connected to all of the right people, and we're putting out content that is insightful and is authentic, rather than just more corporate shit that nobody reads elsewhere.
I appreciate that. Well, Tim, this is the end of the show. For our listeners who want to connect with you, learn more about DLA Ignite, how can they connect with you?
The best thing to do is to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm Timothy or Tim Hughes on LinkedIn, or our website is dlaignite.com.
All right. Thanks again, Tim.
Thanks, Jeff.